Welcome to Rudderless, the podcast where two strangers give you completely unqualified advice. This is Ty, and I'm here with Nathan.
Hey, this is Nathan. Just a quick note about the audio quality on this episode is not great, but I thought that there was some good info, especially when Ty gets into PTSD and options for what to do when you're freaking the fuck out. So if you'll bear with the audio quality, I think there's some good stuff in here, and thank you for listening.
Oh, man, how are you?
I don't know. I guess in the past, 18 hours, I decided to record and release a solo single and just kind of...
Wow!
And I don't know why I did that, but...
Okay.
It's so insanely easy to do now that it's kind of like...
Why not?
I don't know. I was asked to do it for a compilation, and then I made this thing, and I was like, I kind of like this, and also, why do I need to wait for somebody else to put it among 30 other tracks that nobody's going to listen to?
Right.
You know what I mean? I can just put it out myself, and then at least the people who are interested in me will hear it.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, it's like, I just... That's what I've been doing, aside from walking around and taking fistfuls of Advil and Tylenol.
What the fuck?
I wish I could see what you were doing.
Yeah, me too.
Because then I could really I could boss you around a lot better.
Right.
Not like that, no.
But, yeah, I'm glad we don't have video. I hear a lot of... Yeah, I mean... I feel like I wash my face maybe once every 3 days. Like, I don't need to be looked at.
Yeah. I wash my face more often than that, but I also don't need to be looked at. So.
I didn't catch that.
Cool. I wash my face more than that, but I also don't need to be looked at.
Yeah. I wish I washed my face more because I have really good skin when I actually wash it, but... It's just hard to care. So, yeah.
Do you have or have you ever used like face wipes?
Yes, I have ever used them. I have a kind that I like and it's right by my bed, but still sometimes I'm just too apathetic to use them.
Yeah, that's like that's some next level laziness right there. So you're telling me you have face wipes by your bed. And
yeah.
It's like, eh.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't care. Maybe I'll break out. We'll see what happens. Just go to bed with sunscreen and foundation on. Yeah.
Yeah. I also have a brand that I like, and just about any other brand I hate because it leaves like a scent, a smell on your face.
Ooh, yeah.
And it's always some weird makeup-y.
Ooh, yes. Yes, I feel that. Are you willing to share what brand you like?
Biore. So, you know, like Biore pore strips or whatever?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
They make these packs of face wipes in white, and they don't... I mean, they smell like something, but it's pretty neutral smelling, and
yeah,
I don't mind it. Especially, like, in the morning when you're going to work or you're going to sleep or wherever, you don't want to wash your face.
Yeah.
I like those guys, and I hate pretty much every other kind that I've tried.
Okay.
How about you?
I like the kind by It Cosmetics, which unfortunately, like, you can't find that at Target, but Sephora has it, and I'm sure that Ulta has it, and,
okay,
you know, 80% sure that Ulta should have it anyway. Yeah, I like those because most other wipes leave my face sticky. They have like aloe or something.
Yeah, what is
that? It leaves a film on your face, and I don't need that. I'm well oiled myself already.
Yeah.
So, 7th grade or 8th grade, one of those horrible grades. Like, my face was so oily, and my I don't know. Like, I did not have any idea what to do about it. And my mother gave me like absolutely zero skincare advice, and I wouldn't ask her for advice, nor would she ever give advice.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, I was at recess one time and someone wiped their finger along my nose and said, "Ew, did you just dip your face in water?" And it was like so profoundly humiliating.
Wow.
At the time. But it was also like really invasive. Like, can't you?
How old were you?
Probably 12.
And the person who did that was about the same age?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's some total like middle school cruelty right there.
Yeah.
Kids that age would love to do shit like that.
Yeah, they're horrible.
They're the worst.
Speaking of that, I had a really bad PTSD type freak out last night on a call with my writing group. Yeah, first of all, I just find it really hard to. So I was trying to explain like what happens when I, what it means when I say PTSD freak out, because I feel like the only things talked about for PTSD commonly in pulp culture are like flashbacks. But this wasn't necessarily a flashback, but it is like time stops and all this stuff wells up in me. And the stuff is like a conviction that I'm ruined, that I'm like internally completely broken, that I can't get away from this event that happened to me a long time ago, that I shouldn't be living, that it's too hard, like there's too much pain for me to bear. And that combined with dissociating and coming back to myself. And so all that was happening while I was in a writing workshop trying to give feedback on someone's writing. And I just started sobbing during the middle of my feedback. I wasn't giving feedback on the part that was triggering to me, even though I had stuff to say about that. So I just burst into tears as I was talking and started sobbing and trying to give feedback through the sobbing while reassuring people that I was not crying about the work. So
that sounds really
It was so uncomfortable. It felt very embarrassing. I've cried on like at least half the calls with this group, and it's all like PTSD shit coming up, and it's just really difficult. And I feel bad for them because I think a lot of people get this feeling like when someone cries that they're supposed to fix something or give them attention or anything, and like that's the opposite of what I want. I just want to like be left alone and like not be looked at crying.
So you want to keep having the experience that you're having, the writing workshop part. You want to keep engaging in that, right?
Yeah.
But you don't want anybody to notice or take issue with the fact that you're sobbing.
Yes, exactly. Like, I wish I weren't. Right. I wish I weren't sobbing. There's no way for me to stop it. I'm going to, like, white knuckle through what's going on and still give my feedback. And then afterwards, you know, hang up and like collapse sobbing and like considering whether or not I should kill myself kind of thing. And you know what? I didn't drink, and so I was really proud of that.
That's great.
Yeah, because I think when I get it really triggered like that, the go-to coping mechanisms that I've used for like much of my life were self-injury and then later on just like alcohol, just like numb it all out.
Right. That's something I've been thinking about, because for you, I know the first part of that really well, but I don't know the part of you that tried to deal with it by abusing alcohol.
Right.
So when you would do that, is it kind of like, I would always say like, it's the only thing that turns my brain off.
Mm-hmm.
And gives me a moment's rest where I can just exhale for a second?
Yeah.
Was it like that or something different?
It's partially that, but it's partially, I think, partially self-censorship. And
self-abandoning
maybe. Yeah, self-abandoning. Like, I'm having these feelings of not just pain, but, like, grief and anger and sorrow. And I don't want to listen to those feelings. So, right. So I want to, like, drown them out, just like they were repressed when I was a kid. I still want to, like, repress them now.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. So I look at this when I'm in such a situation as a matter of harm reduction. And that's mm-hmm. been really helpful to me, because sometimes I have had drinks in response to that after going through the suicidality and being like, okay, I know that I don't, like, my rational brain does not actually want to die, but I'm headed in a bad, like, self-injury direction, and so I need to, how can I handle that aspect of it? And mm-hmm. so a lot of times before I had more coping skills, like, the next step down from self-injury would be drinking.
Yeah, which is, I mean, to be fair, also self-injury, the way that you or I would do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely self-injury, but for me, like, 5 drinks is much easier to heal from than, like, cuts or...
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I suppose you didn't keep at it for 20 years.
Yeah, yeah, I was drinking for, like, 2 years.
It sounds like an awful experience that you're finding better ways to deal with.
Yeah.
And also, one of the things that you said that I thought was cool was that you realized that the suicidal ideation part is not really what you want to happen.
Right. I think I started thinking about suicide. I realized that I could actually kill myself when I was 12. And so ever since then, it's been kind of this fantasy of reaching relief, you know, of not having to feel pain anymore. And
sure.
Sometime in the past couple of years with therapy, I realized that these thoughts that would come up about it and impulses that would come up about it are just like a very well-worn path in my brain.
Right.
That I just go down to seek that relief of imagining not feeling pain anymore.
Yep.
And that I can kind of just brush those thoughts away and be like, that's just a thought. It doesn't mean anything. It's just something that I've thought a lot before. So that's why it's coming up now.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, for me, the best ways I've found to deal with that are to put myself to bed, like, right away, and just, like, in the most painful moments, just literally, so can I take another breath? Can I withstand this for another breath? And the answer to that has always been yes, thankfully. And and just paying attention to, like, the fact that I continued breathing, and then doing some, like, rounding mindfulness things, like describing what's around me.
Yeah.
Puts me way the fuck to sleep. And then I wake up the next day and I'm like, oh, okay, I did it.
Yeah.
And also, like, this is my slogan that I use personally, which is, you can always kill yourself later.
Yeah.
Like, if you need
it, absolutely.
If I need it on the back burner as, like, a last ditch solution, and I use that in, like, quotes, solution, you know, I can have that as a last ditch solution. But what I also realize is there's always something else to try instead of that. Like, if I decide that my whole life is fucked, I could sell the belongings I have and move to Florida and join a cult, or you know, start training manatees, or hit the
right.
road and, like, follow the are the Grateful Dead still around?
Some version of them. I think there's a version of them with John Mayer out there.
Oh, wow.
that's doing big business.
Okay.
But yeah, of course, there's always some version of the Dead or the Fish or
okay.
something.
Yeah. So there are like these alternate realities, like different paths I could actually take in my life. And you know this, but I'm not a Grateful Dead fan or anything like that. I'm just saying, like, in this extreme state of emotion that I'm in, I try to think of all the other ways that I could live my life that would be very different from how I'm currently living it. And then I'm like, well, you know, if it gets to the point of trying to kill myself, then I might as well try mm-hmm. one of these other ways of living, because as yeah. far as I know, we only get one life. So
yeah,
might as well check it out.
And I would say think big.
Yeah.
Like think big. Really big, like get outside of your state, get outside of your city, get
yeah.
outside of your country.
Yes.
Think about living on a different continent.
Yes. Totally.
What if you lived in the mountains? What if you lived on the beach? Like just fucking, what's the most extreme other thing that you could do?
Yes.
You could try that first.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's that or be dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's helpful to me that you said that.
Oh, good. Yeah. I often, like, I think it's too grim for a lot of people, but I think you and I share these self-destructive, like, habits or impulses. So,
mm-hmm.
and then I wanted to mention the other things that helped me with getting through this PTSD episode last night, or things that I could have used. I used ice. I used a cold pack on my chest and my back and my face.
Okay, that's a little different because you've mentioned sort of immersing your head or your neck in cold water, but use some sort of pack. What was that?
Yeah, just like a normal cold pack that you put in the freezer. So it's like this frozen gel, and I just got the biggest one I could find and like put that on my back or my chest, and then get another one and like put it over my face. My eyes is helpful.
Yeah, there's something very soothing about having cold on your eyes.
Yes.
I think a lot of people with anxiety, well, it's like when you're stressed or you're tired, you rub your eyes. There's something really soothing about having a cold compress of some sort on your eyes when you're just freaking the fuck out.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other things, let's see here. I wrote down a list because I actually asked for advice before my workshop started. And the other tips I got, some of which I used, were get under something heavy, like a weighted blanket or a pet.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that.
Those are all the rage the past year or so, blankets.
Yeah, I love mine.
Do you?
I do.
Where'd you get it?
I think I just got it at the big box store, and the trick for me was finding one that didn't trap all the heat. So
that's exactly what I worried about, because I like to be like cold when I sleep,
yeah.
or I like the room that I'm in to be cold. And I didn't know that you could get one that wouldn't melt under.
Yeah. If you look for one made out of bamboo.
Hey, hey.
It's funny how something so small can make me, like, laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. You and I both appreciate just silliness for silliness' sake, I feel
yes.
like, sometimes.
Yeah.
So you're talking about your weighted blanket.
Yeah. So if you get a weighted blanket, look for one made with bamboo and not polyester and not even cotton.
Okay.
And the bamboo material is, like, viscose or something like that. It's very silky. It's very lightweight. It does trap some of the heat, but it's not like a fucking oven like the other weighted blankets I've tried.
Right. And I'll tell you something I learned about cotton is that people are always, when they're buying sheets, they're always prioritizing thread count. And if you tend to be a hot sleeper or you don't like being hot, you don't want a high thread count.
Oh.
That means they're all so densely packed together that they don't breathe.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, bamboo sheets, that kind of thing, if you can find them or afford them, are great. But don't splurge on a high thread count if you're a hot sleeper, because you're going to hate it.
That is wonderful life advice. By the way, I'm drinking coffee with espresso, extra espresso powder poured in, and it's super gritty. It's leaving like miniature coffee grinds all around my mouth.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of like Turkish coffee or Ethiopian coffee.
That's a real like Mad Max look, like you just crawled out of the desert or something.
Totally.
I'm at this pretentious, overpriced coffee shop that everybody hates in East Nashville, and I got an espresso tonic.
Ooh.
And it's actually pretty delicious.
Really? What's in it?
So it's like basically like a gin and tonic, but with espresso instead of gin. So it's like a shot of espresso, tonic, and a twist of lime.
Oh my god.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. Just for something different, it's surprisingly good. It's like, but it is like a cocktail. Like I'm probably not going to have many of these in my life, but as an every once in a while thing, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I find that it's nice to spice up sobriety with weird drinks.
Yeah, totally. Plus your sugar allowance is so much higher. Because you're used to drinking all of your sugar, so you can get away with having a donut or a bag of Skittles or something, and it doesn't even matter because you would have just drank that in your past life.
That's true. And you save so much money by not drinking, too.
So much money. Although nothing compared to, like, a Coke addict.
Right.
When I talk to people who are into other drugs and they talk about what they would spend in a day, I'd be like, I'd spend that in a month.
Oh, God.
And I drank a lot. Like, I was stocked at home. I went out. Like, I was never not in booze, but they would spend that in like a day.
Wow.
So I guess.
Damn.
I'm glad I didn't. I'm not glad about any of it. Never mind that whole train of thought.
Yeah. I just have no idea how you would afford that for very long. So
you just start doing shady shit a lot sooner than you would otherwise, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. So I was thinking the other ways, there was one more way that someone suggested that I try calming down, and I forgot what she called it. It was like the Hulk breath or something like that, but basically like tighten all your muscle, all of them, and like get super tight, curl up into a ball, kind of like expel all your air, and then of course let your muscles all release at once and take a huge breath, and it feels really good. You're probably going to have to do it like multiple times.
But, so you did enjoy that, because I've tried that one and I didn't.
Yeah, I actually really like the physical ones. I mean, I guess they're all kind of physical, but just noticing that your body can feel different is helpful to me in telling your brain it's possible to feel different than you feel right now.
And that you reinforcing that you have the control over that.
Right. Yeah.
The same mind that's spinning out of, or you feel like is spinning out of control, actually has control over the body. If you want, if you can get to where you can exercise that control. Yeah, I don't like feeling tense at all. I was talking to my therapist about this, even when I used to drink, and I would think about my first drink, I would immediately get really painfully tight in my neck and shoulders.
Oh, wow.
Before I'd had anything, just the thought of I'm going to order a something or other, I would get all tight, and I would like start stretching my neck and shoulders, almost like I was getting ready for a fight or something. Like,
oh my god,
almost like a not a trauma response, but like a bracing for something that was going to happen.
So you would find yourself getting really tense and like almost the fight mode of fight or flight.
Yeah,
when thinking about.
Yeah, like bracing for something that was going to happen. And then when it would, I guess it would subside once I started, but it was always the anticipation of the beginning of drinking. I would get super painfully tight in my neck and shoulders.
Did you feel like the only way to get rid of that was through drinking?
By the time it got to that point, so I'm already thinking about it. I've decided I'm going to do it. I'm all tense.
I'm definitely going to do it now.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, all of my memories of like free first drink sitting at the bar, whatever, are trying to stretch out my neck and my shoulders. And it took me a long time to realize that, those two things were related.
Wow.
I don't know. I wonder if anybody else has that or has had like physical, it's not a reaction to the substance itself. It's a reaction to the idea or the thought that I'm about to take the substance.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Send us a message if you have noticed anything like that. It reminds me of like a aura that people get before they have a migraine or before they have a seizure.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of this thing is coming up, it's going to happen, and it's a little like foreshadowing. But it also sounds like, to me, it sounds like your body knows that that's not what you should be doing and that it's kind of protective.
Yeah, that's what it feels in retrospect. That's what it feels like, is it feels like it's bracing for a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so strange the way that like the body's intelligence that I don't even begin to understand.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That gets into all that somatic work and all that kind of stuff that I just haven't even scratched the surface of.
Agreed. I remember when I first started noticing my drinking and like how it made me feel, how I felt before the drink, how I felt during the drink, how I felt after, you know, just like really slowing down those moments and paying attention. Mm-hmm. Before I fully stopped drinking. And I was at work one time and it was like the first anniversary of my father's suicide. And I was, this happens to me all the time where I think I'll be in a situation and I think I'll be fine with it, or it like won't even occur to me that I might not be fine with it. And then I just find myself in the middle of some kind of meltdown.
Right.
Yeah. So I worked at this place where there was alcohol everywhere, like literally every like cubicle had alcohol in it. And there was alcohol in the hallways. It was, yeah. So anyway, I was at work and I told my work friend, she asked how I was, and I'm like, I'm kind of devolving here. Like, I just realized it's the anniversary of my father's death, and like, I have all these emotions, and I, you know, I don't know how to work and process everything that's going on inside me right now. And she was like, you need a drink. You should have a drink.
What a great
thing. And I remember I did. I had a drink. You know, for me, that was all the justification I needed. With someone telling me you need a drink. And so I had it and I felt so much fucking worse afterwards because, you know, of course you have even less control of your emotions and then you're like not really present to process
right. What's
going on inside.
Right.
So
yeah, totally.
I just find it weird that that's kind of people's go-to for everything, for an immediate need, like so much so that they recommend it to other people.
It's so wild because like, I always say about like Twitter, like what if there were an app where every time you looked at it, it just made you feel bad.
Right.
And that's kind of like drinking in that situation. It's like, what can we do to make this worse for you today?
Yeah.
You know, like it's actually completely not the right medicine for you at that moment.
Right. Like, maybe you could give me a hug instead of a shot.
Yeah, or let's go outside and take a walk and talk about this or not talk about it.
Yeah.
Look at the sky.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I guess that's it. I guess we should wrap it up.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. But what about, remember that show Starting Over?
I kind of do, yeah.
Oh, my God. You love that show and you were like, you would be perfect for that.
Really? Was it like
yeah.
a rehab show or what was it?
It was like an emotional rehab show. It was like people would go to this house and they would have a one-on-one counselor and they would have like a group counselor and they would just try to like really massively work through their trauma.
Wow.
It was a really cool show. I think it only had a couple of seasons, but like you loved that
really?
Show.
I mean, I'm not at all surprised that I loved it. I just don't remember that particular one.
I just remember like coming home all the time at like 1 o'clock when it was on, and you were like, starting over, son, like, come watch it with me. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm changing what I'm doing this afternoon.
Good.
But yeah, it was a good show.
It's important that I derail you from your ambitions for the day to watch TV.
Totally. You also got me into America's Next Top Model.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in a long time. I wonder if it's still
me
good.
Me neither. No, it's
no.
not.
I mean, it was never good.
Yeah,
I wonder if, like, I kind of figured that they just kept kind of cookie cuttering them out after a while. And if you'd seen one, you'd seen them all kind of thing.
Yeah. I saw all of the ones with Tyra as the host when they started getting really fucking weird and annoying with their techniques. Like, they introduced a social, like, voting American Idol type component.
Oh.
And that was, that just tanked it for me. That was
Well,
awful.
Then it's just a popularity contest. That's not not America's Next Famous Person.
Yeah. And you're not going to become a supermodel based, you know, you're not going to like do high impact, high profile campaigns and be in vogue based on being like popular on Instagram.
Right.
Those aren't the same skill set. So anyway, and then they got a new host and it was still terrible. So I haven't watched in a while.
Okay.
Oh,
I won't revisit that then.
Okay, yeah. Oh, I had to confess to you, like, do you know how much I love The Bachelor?
No.
Okay. I love, like, in a terrible way, that show. I started watching a few years ago because I thought the concept was absolutely terrible and, like, ridiculous and just, like, asking for people to, you know, feel terrible about themselves, basically.
Great.
Yeah. And it's just fascinating psychologically to me how people show up on camera and how they relate to each other and like negotiate their interactions and all this stuff. Like the shit they say is like baffling sometimes. So anyway, that's like the only TV show I dedicatedly watch.
I mean, that's good because they always say, you know, like if you're only going to watch one show, it's not Breaking Bad or The Wire, you know, it's The Bachelor. You got to watch it. And I've been remiss in not checking out The Bachelor, so I stand corrected and I don't know, maybe I'll see it sometime.
I mean, it's like delightfully terrible. And also, it's just so ridiculously evangelical almost about monogamy and about
this concept of
true love and like soulmate and marriage, and it's just like a huge brainwashing tool for the masses.
Right.
And there gets to be this point near the end of every season where the person is supposedly like in love with like three people.
They're just all so wonderful. How can I choose?
Yeah, their relationships are all different, and like I'm in love with all of them, and how do I choose? And then by the end, you know, inevitably they choose someone after a whole bunch of tears and like drama, and then they tell that person like it was you all along.
No, it wasn't.
I know, it's like it could have been any of those people, but anyway, it's just fascinating to see how people think about love and marriage and connection to me. That's why I watch it. It's like watching wildlife.
Thanks for listening to Rudderless. If you like our podcast and you want to help us out, you can rate and review on iTunes or wherever you listen. You can also send us your questions. We really want to hear from you. The weirder, the better. And you can get those to us on Instagram at Rudderless Podcast or by email at rudderlesspodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to leave us a voice message, you can do that at anchor.fm/rudderless. You can also contribute to our Better Audio Fund there if you are so inclined. Thanks for listening, and we will see you in a week or so. Bye.